everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bad End Podcast. This is a very special episode because it's episode 69.
It's the best number in the whole world.
Did I introduce myself? I don't even remember at this point.
No, you didn't.
I'm Katie McCarthy of US Gamer. I am joined as always by Joshua Calixto, writer at many places, and Kyle Cooksdale, developer of Cantata and what's the bird game? I forgot your bird games.
The beach.
How did I forget the beach?
It's generic.
Anyway, sorry. Also developer of The Beach, cute sequel game. Say hello, fellas.
Hello.
What's up, everyone? Happy 69th.
Yeah. Honestly, I was so excited, and then I was like, we should do something special, but we literally just realized it was episode 69. Like before recording this, so
maybe we could do like a 69 episode special something.
69 for 69,
like for the 6,900th.
Well, we could do that. Well, I mean, like episode? Maybe we could do one that's like a bonus that's like very 69 themed when we're more prepared. Mm-hmm. We can bring on some sexy people.
Yeah,
or like only talk on like about sexy game stuff.
Hot coffee. Yeah, we
God of War 2.
God of War.
No, I'm saying we should get some like people who make like
Dream
conscientious
Daddies,
sex games.
Hot.
Yeah. Like we get Dream Daddy, yeah. We get Robert Yang, we get some like other indie,
oh,
like,
Robert
sex
Yang,
game people.
Yeah, that's the goat right there of sex games. Like
make
you don't
get
better, man.
We can do it. This episode will be
What's the T-Room, right?
PG-13.
That's the game the bathroom game where
yeah,
you,
the
you
guns.
Give heads
yeah.
and guns.
The gun dicks.
That's
did you
like,
guys ever play like dating sims, like on Newgrounds dating sims?
Yeah, dude.
Anything like that? It would be crazy to talk to one of those people because, not that I ever played those in high
not
school.
I played
ever...
like very innocent Atome games or whatever, like or Atome. I don't know how you pronounce it. Like Amnesia is a great one. Beautiful art, available on Switch, I think now. I used to play them on Vita, and then like. Oh, man, there's another one where it's like all fictional literary characters. I don't know. It's or not fictional, but it's like literary people like in like weird anime dating form. Very good.
It is like crazy if you look at the top games on Steam that pretty frequently they're like hentai anime visual novels.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would say like
huge market.
At least like two of them a week are like in the top charts on Steam. So... which is like
I mean
crazy.
Well, what's weird is that when I've looked at those out of curiosity, it's like it'll be like a match three game or like like a weird platformer with like anime boobs in it or like even some like weird building construction sim or something that just
like
so
like,
happens
boobs.
To have anime boobs in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I would be interested in playing one of these things, but like, I don't want to actually play a shitty game alongside anime titties. You know what I'm saying?
You want them divorced from the stupid game shit. You just want the anime titties.
Make
or
it a VN, make it something, but I don't want to play a fucking platformer with that.
Man,
so I don't know.
Also, have you imagined have you ever thought about playing one of those games that where they take all the sex stuff out? Because there is this game series called Uda Ware Ramuno. I'm totally butchering that name. But it's this series of visual novels that came to America. But the big thing about them coming to like consoles and everything is they took all like the sex stuff of the series out. So this used to be like a porn game, and now it's just like a very boring visual novel. Like so boring. Like so boring.
It's like watching a porn without the sex scenes.
Yeah, it's fascinating from that perspective of like, who thought this was a good idea? Because it's like you're kind of taking out the one lively thing of this game. I don't know.
The story of a stepmom who walked in on her stepson, and they had a conversation, and that was it.
End of game.
Yeah,
and also it's like a 60-hour thing. It's like, and there's two games of these, and it's just like, it's like also part tactics or like, our tactical RPG kind of like Fire Emblem type thing. It's not good. It's just not good. Very
dude,
not good.
Nobody wants that shit.
Nobody wants it. So boring.
I played some games, but Kyle went to PAX.
Yeah, I did. Surprisingly.
What were the circumstances? What did you do? What was the experience like? Had you been to PAX before? Tell me everything.
Well, Josh, have you heard of a little thing called COVID-19? Actually, you just coughed, which makes me think that.
Whoa. I think Josh checked, is bud. Infected.
Better get checked, bud.
I hear it's transferable through podcasts. I did have the flu last week, and it started with a cough.
Oh, my God. That's so scary.
And I was dude, I got a fever. I looked at like, the it's coronavirus happening. Symptoms, and I was like,
dude, oh, my God. I've done that, too, and it's like coronavirus symptoms are like coughing, fever, and sneezing, and you're like, yeah.
No, I got it.
Yeah, it was everything.
Did you see a Steve Wozniak might be patient zero?
No what? Fucking way, dude.
He tweeted, like, he and his wife, like, came back from China with the flu and said, like, we might be patient zero. It's like, what? Anyway.
Okay, amazing.
So that's crazy. Anyway, carry on.
He won't get the credit.
He won't get the credit. Steve Jobs is going to get the credit.
Am I right?
Anyways, I went to PAX. We can talk about coronavirus stuff later on, but long story short is that I was talking to my wife, Rebecca, on like Thursday of last week, and it was like looking like GDC might get canceled. And she was like, you should probably go to PAX just to like try to meet people in case GDC gets canceled. And I was like, good idea. So then literally like Thursday morning-ish, I just emailed everyone I had meetings with to reschedule everything to PAX. And luckily, like a lot of people that come overseas to go to GDC also come overseas to go to PAX. So a lot of people I wanted to meet with were at PAX. So I was basically decided to do it because I got enough reschedules to happen. So drove up on Friday, I guess, to basically to Boston. And like as we were in the car, like halfway to Boston, I get the email that GDC is canceled. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad.
You made like such a good move.
Yeah. But so PAX is like, besides like all the stuff that I was doing, it's crazy. It's still like, I've been to, I guess I went to PAX West this year for like similar reasons. And I've been to E3, technically twice, but really once. And it's still just weird going to like fan conferences for video games stuff because they weren't really a thing when I was sort of like the target audience for that. I don't think, I guess PAX has been around for a while, but like it feels like game con culture is still new in like the last 15 years or something, 10 years. So even when I was like 20-ish, I wasn't like trying to go to PAX to like check out the cool booze or something. And because even like PAX South is in like Texas, it's not even in like Georgia. So it's not even the South. I don't understand what's up about that. I don't get it. So it's like weird, like going to these things, sort of like having been not like a closeted gamer, but the way we've talked about before, we're all just like, we play video games, but the idea of like cons and like publicly being a gamer is not a thing that was ever part of my identity as someone who plays games. So it's weird going to these things. And it's just,
and
like,
it shows, Kyle.
Oh, yeah, Kyle. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. Actually, check this out. I got some gamer merch right here. You ready for this? You ready to get jealous? I'm going to put it on right now.
Yeah.
Oh, what's up?
What is it?
What is it?
Yeah, it's subtle.
Oh, it's a sock pop, right? Right?
Yeah, it's a sock pop cap.
Whoa. Do they sell those? Do they have a booth there?
Yeah.
Whoa, yeah. That's cool. Good for them.
And I got this.
Indie is not gamer.
Wow. I'm jealous, actually.
Indie is not gamer.
Yeah, this is some like low-key game. This is like the gamer merch that I'm about. I got the sock pop beanie and the sock pop cap.
Yeah, I want that. That's cute.
Bam.
That's not gamer.
They're such a good group of dudes. They're great.
Dude, man, they were like just boy banding it up over there. Yeah. They're just so like
they're so adorable.
Band.
Like
they're super adorable. Like, it's like, oh, look. I asked them.
And also, like, I don't know how they do it. I'm just like, how are you guys like not just stressed out all the fucking time? I don't get it.
I think they have a good pipeline. I think they're like really good. They have like they reuse a lot of stuff in like a really in a positive way.
Yeah, they do like basically it's like every week, every 2 weeks they publish something, so it's like always a different member. And they also collaborate and stuff. So it's like they have like a good flow going for sure.
It's like they have like just enough people where the burden's not too much for any one person.
Yeah.
But yeah, so PAX was like crazy. It's like a crazy games thing. Like it's a lot of people kind of hawking their wares. It's like a lot of people screaming stuff. They do this thing that like, I think people did it at GDC a little bit, but where they'll have like booths with stages and they get the crowd to yell a lot to attract people to the booth, which is like really fucking annoying. So the people are yelling a lot. But yeah, I mean, Isabel was there. Tom Nook was there. KK Slider made an appearance.
KK,
my boy. It's especially relevant for me because my initials are KK. So I'm like, yeah. On one hand, it's like super cool because you're going around and you're like seeing all the games that you've heard about and like are interested in. But also it's like the worst environment to play 99% of those games because there's like a million people. And especially in places like the indie sections that are just kind of like wall to wall with booze, like when it's packed, you can't really stand close to something without being in the way. And also the booze space themselves are pretty small. So I had about like 3 hours or so to kind of like walk the conference floor. And that was enough to like see everything but engage with nothing. It was like enough to like clock kind of what was there, but even then still missed some stuff. So yeah,
was there a lot of skepticism about coronavirus there?
No, not that I could tell. There weren't like a lot of masks. There's a lot of cosplay, and people were like open. I mean, I think some people pulled out. Like, I think Activision was there and they pulled out. But, like, there was definitely not like a crazy, like, empty booth space everywhere. Like, it definitely seemed pretty packed. No coronavirus worries, right or not. So, yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was cool to go. I mean, it's like, it's hard to figure out, like, if I would go again if it wasn't for this thing. Like, I'm just not the kind of person I'm not going to go to PAX for 3 days and like wait in a line somewhere for 2 hours to play 30 minutes of a video game. So
it's more worth it to go just to see people. Like,
I went to
PAX West a couple of years ago. I hung out with a lot of people and then I had like a few appointments, like not even that many. I did a couple panels. So it was like, I don't know. It's like,
yeah.
You don't go there to play the demos. You go there to like see your friends and like, you know, that type of thing.
This is kind of like mushy, like emotional life stuff. But it was like really cool to go to PAX this year because I've like been a game developer on and off long enough now, which I guess it's been like technically like, it was like 2 or 3 years, like part-time and like really full-time as of November. But like go to like a thing like this and like know people on like the other side of the wall, so to speak, like not just be there's like a random developer or like just a player or something. Like I knew a lot of the developers that were there and was like cool to like catch and meet up and talk to people. And I was like, oh, I'm part of something now. This is nice. I belong here. So that was like cool. Anyways. So yeah. So PAX was like, it was cool. It was cool to like go see games. It's also weird, like seeing PAX stuff in light of a media strategy for brands that are like just also very online. Like, it was kind of like the whole thing, kind of pre like major internet journalism stuff, where something like E3 was a big deal because like things came out of E3 that you could like watch or whatever. But now like the press cycle basically never ends, so it's not like I'm going to PAX and being like, whoa. Look at this thing. Like most of the things I'm seeing, I'm like, okay, like I know that exists, seen that. It's cool to see that in motion. Like I've been looking forward to Iron Harvest, which is this sort of, I thought it was more of a traditional RTS, but it's actually a lot more like Company of Heroes, but it's got this like cool, like agrarian industrial aesthetic. And I've like seen it before and I've like seen screenshots and there was like gameplay there and I was like, oh, cool. But at the end of the day, like it's all video games, like they're going to come out. There's videos of them. So it was fun. I mean, people like kids that were really young that were there that were like, you know, 10 to 15, or were just like losing their mind, which I thought was really cool.
That's cute.
It's like just totally like just playing, like have zero context on what's going on and just like enjoying the hell out of like whatever. So that's cool. And it's, I'm glad that this thing can be there for those people, especially. So that was my PAX East.
Wow. Sounds like a great time, Kyle.
Yeah. I might be sick from PAX East now.
All my coworkers are sick right now. Like all three of the people we had at PAX East. They all went to PAX East and they are all sick. Like everyone.
I'm definitely like a little drowsy and like I definitely feel like I have something in my throat. So I'm
take NyQuil.
Dude, this is why they're canceling all the other ones, dude.
No, I think it's just like, I think I got sick after, I got sick after GDC last year too.
Just think about
it. It's any convention.
Breeding grounds
any, it's just
for
convention.
Yeah. You're holding the same controllers. You're exchanging business. It's dirty. It smells like armpits. It's a bunch
always of carry hand sanitizer on you. That's like my pro tip. It's like after every meeting, after everything, you're just slathering that shit on.
Don't touch
hand
your
sanitizer.
Face.
Hand sanitizer.
I can't not touch my face. People keep saying, don't touch your face. I touch my face all. I'm touching it right now. During
stop
this podcast,
touching your face,
I will.
Katie.
Honestly,
stop
but I also
your
don't.
Face.
I don't leave my room, so like honestly, how am I going to get infected? Literally, I'm in my room all day long.
It's in the walls.
It's going to be in the water.
It's going to get you. It's going to be like a snake coming out.
I feel like
of
I have the lowest chance of getting it out of anyone. Maybe when I walk to Starbucks in the morning, I would get it, but someone brushes past.
Risky.
And I'm just like,
risky.
Fuck. Yeah. Have you been watching that HBO show, The Outsider, at all?
No.
Okay. Well, there's like, it's like a monster show, but like True Detective. It's like, what if True Detective,
but a
monster show?
That sounds
kind of
cool.
It's fun. Like... It's a little boring now. The first few episodes are really good and then it's boring. But like how it's like, this guy like transmits, like transforming into another human being as he scratches them while like walking past or something. So that's how I'm going to get the coronavirus. So someone's just going to like scratch me. And I'll be like, fuck.
They're going to scratch your hand and then you're going to touch your face.
Yeah. That's gonna be it, and I'm gonna eat kids or whatever they do in this.
Oh,
show.
They eat kids.
Yes, this good monster shit. Eats kids. It's scary.
Nice.
Did you guys play? Let's talk about video games.
Oh,
Katie. Oh wait, Josh.
Josh. What?
Okay, so we got a tweet from Bill, someone named whose handle is Bill, and it says. I love At Bad End Podcast, but I am not here for all this Hollow Knight trashing. Just a Metroidvania? ? Yup, I love it. For reference, I'm on episode 33, so way, way behind. That's like, we're like 36 episodes.
Wow, we're like double that.
Above
I didn't
that.
Even realize on. That we had trashed Hollow Knight before.
Me either.
I thought we were going to do it on this podcast. We're going to trash
so,
it.
So, after reading that, I picked up Hollow Knight and I played the whole game and beat it.
The whole thing? Oh my
god.
I didn't even beat it. I bounced
beat
off.
Hollow Knight. Yeah, the thing is I had given it a couple hours before and I was just like I'd bounced off and I was like, this is it's pretty meh. And after playing through the whole thing, I like it more than I did. I think art direction wise, it's actually really cool. And like, there is some shit in there that's like, the vibes are some next level stuff. And I think a lot of that stuff is like Souls inspired. There's a lot of very clear Souls inspiration in Hollow Knight, aesthetically, gameplay wise, a lot of like the kind of tricks that they try pulling over your head that are kind of interesting. And, that stuff is cool. Like there's some really great use of sound in that game where it's like you'll go into areas that are just completely and utterly silent. There's like no music. There's not like sound effects when you do shit. And it makes you feel like you're in these like ancient depths of like fossils and like old shit all over the place. And it has that like kind of Dark Souls feeling of desolation, history. And like you're going back into like some ancient ruins of something that used to be a thing 8,000 years ago or whatever. You know that feeling where it just feels so eerie to be surrounded by just like death and history and like a place that used to be alive, but clearly this was like millions of years ago to the point where like it doesn't even look recognizable to you. Hollow Knight is good at that. And I think it's at its best when it's doing that kind of thing. But that's all very Dark Souls, you know, and it's like this cartoonish translation of Dark Souls that I think does work, but it all feels like very rippy in that sense. Like it feels like, okay, this is like what Dark Souls did, and this is like how Dark Souls made me feel. And but now a platformer is doing it to me, which
I think
feels a little unearned, even if it is a cool feeling. You know what I'm saying? What were you gonna say, Kyle?
I mean, small plug for the Bad End Discord. A lot of great discussion happening in there, and this is kind of touching on some stuff that people mentioned before. But I think I did not beat Hollow Knight. I played it for a while. I think I played it for like 10 hours or so, and I was like, I get it. Which I'd be interested to know why you finished it outside of like just compulsion to finish it. Because I did not find a compelling reason to sort of like keep going. But
that's
I felt. One of the things we talked about on the Discord was sort of like that Hollow Knight, like I think all of us collectively recognize that like Hollow Knight is like a capital G good game. Like it's feels good, plays good. It's like got all the right progression stuff in all the right places. Like whatever, but that it specifically represents sort of like the best of a genre that not a lot of us really cared about playing the best of. Specifically, I was mentioning how I really like Metroidvanias, but I think what I actually like is Metroid games, not actually Metroidvanias. And this also came up a little bit when we were talking about on the Discord again, the kind of like Breath of the Wild and its resonance that is a factor of the fact that it is a Zelda game, not necessarily that by its own merits it is some amazing thing. Which I don't want to get into that here. We can talk about that later. But specifically that in playing Hollow Knight, it made me really realize that I care a lot more about theme and specifically resonance for a game that I've played before than I was aware that I did. And that Hollow Knight is just like, we posted that thing on the Bad End Twitter about sort of like faceless white mask character, like I guess self-insert character thing that, I don't know, it just didn't like hit. There's no personality there. I wasn't like sold on the world. And Josh, like you kind of pointed out, so many of the beats of Hollow Knight feel like a cartoony representation of Dark Souls. So even where Hollow Knight is like faltering or whatever, I'm just inserting Dark Souls onto that anyways.
Okay. I have a lot of stuff I want to unpack here. Cause one of, I think the most kind of controversial areas of that discussion that we had on the Bad End Discord, was that, one of the members was saying basically that like, why, like, it just seems kind of like it just seems like a not fun way of playing games to like go through games and just think about like whether things are working for you or not, like the entire time you're playing through the game, which is to say like playing the game like very consciously critically and as opposed to just like enjoying it and then like and just like having letting yourself have fun with the game, which I think is something that a lot of people think when critics speak critically on a thing, because it's like, yo, why are you thinking about it so much? Just like, just have fun with it. Just let it do its thing. And I think for me, and I think probably for us in general, what happens is that like, I thought about this a lot, cause I was like, yeah, maybe I'm just incapable of having like as much fun with something, cause I'm thinking way too, like my critical brain is like way too active during the act of playing that maybe I'm like blocking myself off from having fun. But I think what more happens is that for me, I know that a lot of other critics are different, but for me, I don't like observe or think about games like as I'm playing them. I play a game kind of like absentmindedly and like I absorb it and I take it in. And then afterwards, I try to like sort out the thoughts that I have on it after like a very long session of playing the game or what have you, where it's like, I'm not consciously having second thoughts about what I'm playing as I'm playing it. But then like after I finish playing it, I'm like, how do I feel about this game? And then I try to like assess that. And then I say like, why do I feel this way? And like, that's where the critique comes from. So like, if I feel a little bit weird about a game, if I feel like I'm not actually enjoying it that much when I like actually think about it in my brain, then I will seek to kind of explain why. Or if I'm really enjoying a game, I will do the opposite and seek to explain like why I'm really enjoying that, because it's like, it's about like taking your experience and then putting that into words. And I think where a lot of critics differ is like what that threshold is for like how much they're willing to play before they like step back and have those thoughts, right? Whereas for me, I have this thing recently. I mean, I always have this thing where like sometimes I have this like state. It's like an on and off state where it's like, I want to play a video game. You know what I'm saying? And it's like most video games could be that game that I want to play. Like I'm constantly looking for like some new thing to just kind of just like play, whether I really enjoy it a lot or not. But like if it passes some threshold, then I'm okay with anything being that game. So Hollow Knight was like, I had just played Ori and the Blind Forest the week before that. We got this tweet and I was like, oh, let me pick up Hollow Knight again. And then I kept playing through it and it was a little sloggy at first. I wasn't really enjoying it that much, but then I played enough where I was like, okay, you know, I can play through this and I could turn off my brain and enjoy the thing. But then like afterwards, when I would think about it, I'm like, okay, what's going on? Like, what am I enjoying? What am I not enjoying? And that's where like the critique comes from. That's where this stuff comes from. It's like, it feels at the end of the day kind of hollow to me. No pun intended. I don't think it's a bad game, but it just doesn't feel like there's that much there to me besides the like art direction and like those moments that I think are really cool. Because it feels like very transparently derivative.
Yeah, I'm like, when I review games, I'm like a very prolific note taker. Like I'm always writing down notes of just like straight observations. Maybe it's like a feeling I had for a moment, like, oh, this thing was cool. Or like, this moment I had was very satisfying or not. Or there's this issue, maybe I'm noticing like performance issues or something stupid, but I feel like the nature of my work, I kind of have to be like a very highly observant. And then usually like after I'll take like a day to be like, okay, like how do I feel about this game now that I finish it? Like and I sort out my feelings like that way. But yeah, I also do have games where I just kind of like mindlessly play like a Call of Duty or like an Apex Legends, which I've gotten really into again. But also like on the thinking about Hollow Knight in particular and like why it didn't click with me, like I feel like it's a polished game. Like it's like it plays exactly how it should. Like it's like the art design's like, I guess, good. I don't like the pop figure like character, honestly. Like I don't, it's not my thing.
So
but it looks nice for what it is. I'm sure there are cool bosses and like enemies. So I'm sure like later in the game there's even cooler stuff like that. But yeah, like Hollow Knight, just like I feel like for me it didn't have like the it factor. Like there's nothing in that game where I was like, wow, this like really all clicks to me. Like with like Dead Cells, where it's like you have that first boss on the bridge and you're like, this is fucking tight. This game is so sick. And it just like feels great. And like, yeah, it's like the components all feel good up to that point, but it was like that first major boss in Dead Cells is really what like sold me on that game. And I feel like with Hollow Knight, I never had that like it moment where I was like, yeah, this is like more than the sum of its parts almost. Like it's like there's more to this than I thought there was type thing.
Yeah, I didn't really have that either. And like a lot of the gameplay, I had a lot of issues with in the way that the combat, it was like difficult combat, but not in a way that felt like,
it was just not fun.
Like intriguing. Yeah. It was like just get your hitbox out of the enemy way and then like repeat four patterns, and then if you do it all perfectly then the guy's dead, which is not like particularly intriguing to me. A lot of the platforming was like not that cool, in my opinion. It was just kind of like it had like a nice dash mechanic, I guess. A lot of the Metroidvania stuff felt a little bit like, okay,
hate the map system in Hollow Knight. I think it's another thing.
Really annoying.
I just, when I go into, I just want the map to fill out as I explore. It's not that hard.
That's
it's
one of those like Dark Souls influences. Dude, where it's like, I hate that shit. We want you to feel lost. We want you to feel lost like Dark Souls made you feel lost, but it's like not. It's not.
I feel like you could still feel lost with that format. You know, it's like with Dead Cells. I'm mentioning this again, but it's like, you know, maybe because I've like fallen back into Dead Cells with the recent DLC, but like it, you fumble your way around, and since the roguelike, it's always different and everything. But you like kind of fumble your way around those environments, and then you kind of like backtrack and like, you know, try and figure out. You try to make through fast so you can get through special doors and everything. And there's like, there's still like that lost feeling and like the like, oh, I'm like figuring out this world, and every run feels like very fresh and new and cool. And like, I think that was like one of the primary reasons why I bounced off.
You know what bugs me about, you know what it brings up in Metroidvanias that really fucking bugs me is when they have the Metroidvania thing that you can't get past. Maybe it's like a wall made of like stone that you need like the smash item, ability to get through it. Or it's like a double jump section that's like this wall is a little bit higher, so you have to come here later. It's like when you have your double jump, or there's like a long hallway where you need your dash ability to get through because there's spikes on the top and bottom. Who hasn't seen this shit a million times in here? There's a fucking little thing that you can grapple onto, but I don't have the grappling hook yet. So in all these fucking games, it's just like you're going through and then you're just, it's just Chekhov's guns laying all over the goddamn place where it's like, oh, I'm going to have to come here and smash this fucking wall later. There's no mystery to that, dude. It's like, you know what's insane about Hollow Knight is that this shit's all over the place. It's like breadcrumbs, dude. And it's like, it's obvious. It's like, okay, I can't go here now. I know exactly what power I'm going to get to traverse this thing in the future. And then they give you, they sell little markers for your map that you can use to mark places where that shit is. So it's like you have to buy them from shopkeepers to mark your map where the Metroidvania shit is gonna be. The Metroidvania, like, you need this power to get past this part, places are on your fucking map, so you could find the room later to like find the secret in there. And then it's like, and then you find the secret and it's like a fucking character upgrade or some shit where it's like, oh no, your character slashes 0.5 seconds faster. And this game also has that, oh god, I'm in like going off mode. The game,
Josh just likes it more than he thought.
It was fine, but I thought about all this stuff after I had played it, and I was like, there was some stuff that frustrated me as I was playing the game, and then afterwards, this is what I synthesized my thoughts to be that was bugging me. So that's what you're hearing now, is these filtered thoughts. Not like, it wasn't all off the cuff shit as I was playing the game, but it also has the Ori and the Blind Forest thing of like being, it doesn't know whether to be like indie art style, like cartoonish and like kind of bubbly and like imprecise versus totally imprecise, like totally precise, tough as nails platformer shit, you know, where I started looking up builds at the end, man. That's when you know it's bad news, man. When you start looking up like builds, bro.
This is like, this is a sort of game that I think would be like really great with Prima's strategy guide by your side, where you're like, this is the dumb shit I'm not going to do. This is the critical path. Here's what the map looks like. I'm going to go do these things. And like, I feel like in that way, it's like, it'd be more fun because a lot of this like innate. It's more linear, like,
less Metroidvania.
Yeah, like all the like knowledge gathering bullshit you have to do in Hollow Knight could just be absolved by having essentially a tome of knowledge next to you that's like, this is what the map looks like. So maybe I'll try it again.
I did
strategy guide.
I started using just don't care walkthroughs at the end. I just like,
that's what I'm searched. Saying. You're just like, it's like, I don't care. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Also, like the whole Dark Souls being lost thing, just to go back to that point, I think works in part because like Dark Souls areas look pretty different, like
also
moment to
the
moment.
Level design in those games is incredible, like,
yeah,
like, just
like,
even
Hollow
just playing
like
Sekiro
platforms.
Recently, like I love just like navigating that environment, like it's like you kind of like get a mental map in your head like pretty quickly, and it's just like all so clever, like perfectly laid out, and it's just like feels very like carefully designed for like every like consideration.
I think
that's just from software's talent, really.
I will bring up one thing that I liked about like the design of Hollow Knight, like level design wise, is that I think they did a very cool Dark Souls-esque thing, which is that they make you feel like you're in places that you're not supposed to be, which I think is very rare for a platformer. So there's areas that you'll go into and it's like a secret area, and then there'll be another secret area behind that, and then like another one behind that. And there's times where like they'll stack like 12 secret areas on top of one another, and it feels like you're in like some fucking like forbidden area that like you just should not be in. It's a very eerie feeling. I think Dark Souls does that type of thing. Souls games do that shit where it's like you're in a place you're not supposed to be within a place you're not supposed to be, and there's something like significant there. You know, it's not like it was just a little Easter egg. There was like actually a thing there that was like, in Dark Souls they have it where it'll be like another character or some shit that's like a shopkeeper or something, you know? And Hollow Knight does that stuff. But again, it's like clearly been done before, but it does, but I will say positively that it taps into that feeling well in a type of game where I would not expect it. So I guess that's good. I also played Moonlighter, which...
Wait, hold on. Can I bring up a side thing?
Yes, please.
This whole conversation reminds me... You can spend like 3 minutes on this, but I like went back this past, I guess, a week or two to like try playing Noita again. And like, it's just not there. I'm not getting all of the like, I hope that game comes together.
I think it has like very cool systems.
The idea is really cool, but then in practicality, it's like,
is that the one with like particles?
Yeah. Everything can interact with each other.
It's just weird because like the game, I mean, to your point, Josh, about getting like 0.5 character upgrades, the game like wants you to like really care about the fact that a wand has like a, you know, 0.06 faster cast rate to something, plus like one extra spell that does like a fireball every 10th shot. And then like you go to play and it's just fucking chaos. It doesn't actually matter. It's like every wand is totally nuts and there's so many particles flying around all the time that doesn't like seem like it matters at all.
Dude, the thing about this is all this stuff always plays out the exact same way, and it always will, which is that there's always going to be an optimal stat. Okay, there's always going to be even in these fucking roguelikes where it's like a different game every time. If you watch like Nuclear Throne run-throughs, or if you watch like Binding of Isaac, it's like there's three best weapons that you're looking for, or there's like three best stats that you're looking to upgrade.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are what you look for when you're running these fucking games. And it's like that never changes. That's always how these things play out, even though there's technically a million ways that you could play these games and have fun with your character. Like, there's always going to be an optimal, and that shit is like not, it doesn't feel good like to know that that's how the game works, and it always will. Like, there's always going to be some optimal thing for you to do, and Hollow Knight feels that way. Ori and the Blind Forest felt that way. Every one of these games is going to feel like that. And it's like, I wish we actually had a question about this, from listeners. What are you looking for regarding what you might consider stagnant genres in the future, or how to jazz up genres you consider played out? And I want to bring this up in the context of like roguelikes / Metroidvanias / platformers / anything that relies on like stats or anything. It's like, just make it matter less, dude. Min-maxing is so played out. Min-maxing is fucking played out, dude. Has anybody said this before? Still having fun with min-maxing and doing the optimal build that is always obviously there until the game gets patched, and they nerf the item, and then you find the next thing that's good. This is how video games work now. And it's supposed to be dynamic, but it's not. It's the same fucking thing in every single game. And we're acting like it's not. Right?
Get him.
Am I crazy?
I remember there's literally a quote from, I don't know why this is in my head, and I don't even know if I could ever find it. But I remember reading an interview with one of the designers of the first Borderlands game when someone brought up this point where they were like, hey, like, you've got all these random weapons. Like, surely there's like some best combination to like find. Like, there's going to be one combination that's just the best. And he was like, yeah, probably. But like, that just means that the game is about finding that weapon. And I think like, it's really interesting because I think that all this stuff has lost that thread. It's all the other games that are made that you're talking about act like there are other options. They act like there's other like routes to success when there's actually just one option. Noita is especially bad because your wands are actually interchangeable. So it's not like a wand has fixed properties. Wands can both be upgraded, but also their skills and abilities can be transferred between wands. So it like incentivizes you to basically find like the best wand using the combination of all the other pieces. So the idea that like it's like it's weird that it gives me the ability to make an unoptimal decision when I will always make an optimal one. That's kind of like hard to articulate, but it's weird that like I have a choice, but the choice will always be to do the right thing. I never have a reason not to not stack these things like this. So like to kind of like to your point, I feel like it's in a similar area.
So like, first of all, they act as if Reddit doesn't exist, where like, if you just look up build, you know, like best Binding of Isaac guns, there's going to be a fucking thing in the sidebar already. That's like, here's the top three things that you should get if you're trying to speed run this game or whatever. And for any game, you can do this. And then another funny thing is that like people end up doing the same OP build that they just discover themselves anyway. And then, you know, like how everyone went the fucking red crit build in Witcher or whatever. It's like that same shit where it's like, oh, I did this. And then you find out everyone else did the same thing. And it was like really OP.
Because why would you not do that?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Where it's like, okay, clearly this is like a good option and it works and you go towards it. But you give me all these other options as if they like mean anything, but they actually don't, because A, there's an optimal way, and B, I can just fucking Google it. And I guess that's one thing that I liked about, for instance, Sekiro, like to offer other ways out of this, right? Or just give examples that like this doesn't have to be how it is, right? Sekiro is a great example because it comes from the Dark Souls series where stats are important. Like, stats are important in Souls, period. If you look at speed runs, one of the first things they do is get like the dragon's tail sword and then like use that shit like way earlier than they're supposed to, because it does like a lot more damage. And then they like find ways to like duplicate their swords so that they can like do way more damage than they're supposed to. But like, those numbers matter. But in Sekiro, the numbers do not matter, because you can beat the last boss without any really health or attack upgrades that like whatsoever, except the ones that like you need to get naturally through progressing through the game anyway. So like, that's one thing that's really cool, because it's just like, it's about like your skill and like knowing how to go through these battles, as opposed to like whether you min-maxed your character well enough or whether you got the right sword, because you have like the same sword from the beginning of the game, you know? Like, that's one really cool way of doing it. I think in a lot of situations, like, simplicity is underrated. I've been playing watching a lot of Super Mario Maker 2, and like, Mario is the most fucking, I brought this up as a joke in the last episode of like Mario Had It Right, but like, dude, it's true. Like, it's such like, there's so much simplicity to platformers like Mario, and why can't like people learn from that? I think one of the reasons why like Metroidvanias have become so popular is because like RPG roguelike stats based stuff has become more popular, but I wonder if we're going to hit a wall with that, because for me, I already am, which is that like it all plays out the same fucking way and there's always going to be an optimal weapon. And just like knowing that in the back of your head destroys a lot of the magic of these games. And I think a lot of people know that, which is why these things, there's just like an endless cycle of these games that it's just like, okay, what's the next one? What's the next like cool big gun that I can play with in these games?
And I would say that even stretches to like shooters and like, you know, your loadout in like a game like Call of Duty or Apex Legends. And I used to be like that person that would like go on a guide and I would read all the stats for the guns after every patch and be like, okay, like how they fuck up my favorite gun this time and that type of thing. Whereas like lately, I feel like I've more just been playing, like I like how the feeling of this weapon. So I'm just going to keep picking up like the triple take in Apex, even if it's like not the best sniper anymore. It's like, I don't know, I just like the feel of it. So I feel like I like almost care less about it than like
I
used to.
Sorry. I have slightly less of a problem with it in shooters, multiplayer shooters, because a lot of those stats aren't super relevant unless you're like really, really good at the game. Like,
I don't know, like you gotta get like a barrel stabilizer on your gun or else it's gonna be fucking unwieldy. Like yeah, that type of that's thing. True. You know?
Like the upgrades in Apex have felt like that for a long time, where it was like clearly one of these things is better than the other, and like you either have it or you don't, you know?
Yeah.
But like the guns themselves, like I remember the Wingman was super OP, but it was it was really powerful, but it was also like not as relevant if you weren't like super good at the game, because a lot of people would just suck with the Wingman and like it would be worse than if they had
to be really precise.
Spitfire.
Yeah.
This was something that Josh, I remember I shared this with you at one point, but it's like, I like talking about game design, but we don't have to become a game design podcast, but there was this thing that one of the designers of League of Legends shared about, it was like win-loss ratio curves for heroes broken down by general player skill ranking. And there's like certain heroes that when played in League of Legends, beginner players will pick because it's very easy to play with them and they can have a very easy chance to win. But they have really easy, hard counters that someone with just like a little bit more knowledge knows about. So you look at these like heroes that will just like stomp in like newbie games, like with other newbies, that like someone levels up at whatever the, I don't know what the league equivalent is, levels or whatever, like their win rate is just like plummets because they're super hard to think, or they're hard to play against a player who like knows anything. It's like the same idea in like StarCraft, where if you're like a Protoss player and you're trying to like photon cannon rush someone's base, like literally doing any sort of scouting can prevent against that, but it's a really easy thing where beginner players will forget to do that. So it like, it's really easy to cheese beginner players with it. But as skill ranking goes up, the things change. I think that stats generally have a similar thing where it's like, yes. I mean, we've talked about this a few podcasts before too, where you have a lot of players watch professional people play and the professional people really care about the like 0.5 difference in like barrel grip accuracy bonus, whatever. So it makes this other person care, but like in reality, the person's still going to miss that, like beginner person's going to miss 5 out of the 10 shots that they take. So their 0.5% barrel, whatever the fuck, doesn't actually matter. And maybe they should be choosing like what Katie was saying, the gun that just feels better to play with, and they'll probably do a better job with it anyways. So it's like stats are like smoke screening, or like trying to, I don't know, there's like, they're like throwing a lot of weird sort of things in the mix that make you think you should care, but really you probably don't need to.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that we don't ask a lot of critical questions about these systems in particular, because they feel like such a moving target, where it's like every game has its own quote unique system, and every game has like, how are you going to criticize, like, I guess this is like what streamers end up doing, which is like this system sucks, like it's unbalanced, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not talking about whether the system is balanced or not. I'm talking about the convention of like one thing being more powerful than everything else and everyone just gravitating toward that one thing, which is just how so many video games are now. And I think it's a little bit more of a problem in like single player roguelike types of games. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that on their first playthrough of something because, like, they're not playing it that way where they're, like, looking at the builds and stuff like that. But, like, that's always just the end game of all of these, where it's always one optimal thing. It's always one min-max thing. And, like, that's the natural conclusion of all of these games that are based on these systems, which I think is a problem. And I feel like we should talk about it more, but we don't.
Critical system studies. We'll start it up. New journal.
Critical system studies, man. It's just annoying, man. Like, I just realize any game, I start, like, I swear to you, man, that moment where I start with looking up builds, something happens in my brain where I'm just like, God damn it.
You just break.
It's this. this is really where I am now. When I looked up Hollow Knight builds, I was like, am I doing this right now? And then I beat the boss. I beat the final boss. It was one of those final bosses that, like, didn't feel like a final boss type thing.
Oh, those are the worst. When the game, like, when I beat Grindstone, it was like that. I just, like, finished it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, there's no more levels, I guess. Like, oh, I guess I'm done.
The credits. Yeah. Okay. And it's like, someone's going to now tell me that there's some secret boss that
there's definitely a secret boss. There's 100% a secret boss. Yeah,
I mean, 100%. But also, I just said, fuck that shit, because the credits rolled. I'm free of this goddamn game where the next step, and it's like that. This is the other thing that happens. You beat that boss, and then the game forces you to start min-maxing and grinding and looking at your builds, because to get the true secret ultra boss, your character needs to be like min-maxed. You did research on Reddit, all that shit. And I'm like, no, I don't want to deal with this. Like, it's Hollow Knight, dude. I'm not going to spend that time for Hollow Knight. You know, every game thinks they have the right to ask me to do this shit, to, like, go on the forum to find the right build. No, you don't.
I feel like the best way I would describe Hollow Knight is, like, it's got real, like, it's my favorite game vibes.
Yeah, it's, you know, good vibes. Kind of, like, it's good vibes.
It's like it's the kind of game that someone discovers at that age when you discover stuff and you're like, Hollow Knight fucking rips. This is the best thing. And I think that it's the kind of game that wants you, like, I guess what's a different way to say what I'm saying is that, like, every game is designed such that it wants it to be your favorite game. There's no, like, no one's, like, making some game where they're like, yeah, fuck this. It's like, no, this game's got stats. It's got discoverability. It's got secrets. It's got cool story, strong characters. It's your favorite. It's going to be your favorite game because, look, we got all these great things here. Don't you want to look up stats, Josh? It's your favorite game. You can look them up and get real good at it.
Like Scourgebringer, yeah. Which I actually played this week after you talked about it last time.
Quick impressions. What do you have?
It feels perfunctory. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
It's like,
it feels good.
It feels great. It
feels real good.
It feels great.
It feels great.
But it also feels like deja vu, like times a million. And then it's one of those. It also, like, dude, I've gotten good at, like, spotting the bullshit roguelike system, where this one does the thing where, when you die, you get, like, that currency that you can use to, like, upgrade your character over your lives. So it's like your character is just getting better. Like, there's no sacrifice. Your character's not changing. You're just spending skill points to upgrade your character's abilities. So you're just getting stronger every time you die. But you're just playing through, like, a seeded procedural dungeon over and over and over again. That's just getting slightly easier every time because your character is getting upgraded. And it's like, that's not fucking interesting, dude. Even if, like, the motion feels good and fluid, which it does, I think that's, like, the best part of this game is the motion. It's all, like, dashing and slashing. You, like, never really touch the ground because you're always, like, dashing through the air. You know, that's cool. I respect that. But everything else about it is, like, something you've seen or played before. And yeah, that system.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, someone pitched it to me as, like, Celeste meets Dead Cells. And to me, I was like, that sounds good. I love Dead Cells. I love Celeste.
Yeah.
It is not Celeste.
It's an early access. Okay.
I mean, it is those things.
Like, playing it again now or getting back into it, I'm like, wow, I forgot how much I love Dead Cells. It's like, great. I didn't even encounter this new DLC shit and I paid $5 for it, but, you know.
I feel like there's like a tendency when someone tells you that to think that it's like as good as both of those games combined.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
And this is
kind of like in my head, I was like, yeah, that like sounds sick.
It's like worse versions of both of those because they are combined.
Yeah.
It's more like Hyper Light Drifter meets Celeste.
Oh, no. Oh. That makes me less interested.
It's much more like Hyper Light Drifter meets Celeste to me.
Yeah, because Hyper Light Drifter has a cool vibe, but man.
It's free, so.
Oh, is it?
It's free on Game Pass.
Yeah, oh, it's on Game Pass.
Yeah, PC.
I thought it was an early access.
Probably Xbox.
It is also an early access.
Yes.
But it's also on Game Pass.
Okay.
I also played Moonlighter. Oh, God. That was the worst offender.
Whoa.
Actually, no. The worst offender was Death's Gambit, which is the real
Dark Souls ripoff. I remember that game. Yeah.
Shameless. That was like right after the big Dark Souls.
Shameless.
It was like right after Dark Souls 2.
That was last year,
Death's
right?
Gambit.
No,
that was
like
a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember this game loosely. Yeah.
It's fucking shameless, y'all. Like, at the beginning, there's like a part where a dragon comes overhead and breathes fire and you have to be underneath the thing and it burns all these people on a bridge in front of you. Like, they're ripping literal scenes out of Dark Souls. And it's just sad to see. You hate to see it. I uninstalled it after playing.
Or you love to see it. Well,
you hate.
That's always a good sign when you like uninstall it right away.
Yeah,
I can't remember. I did that with something recently, and I can't remember what it was. Oh man, it'll come to me.
If I want to play Dark Souls, I'll just play fucking Dark Souls, man. It's way better.
Yeah.
Okay, Moonlighter. Yeah. There are people who will fall for Moonlighter. There are people who will enjoy Moonlighter because the concept is good.
It's cute. You're a shopkeeper. I've not played it.
You're a shopkeeper who goes into dungeons and loots them and then sells the items that you get to get better gear to go into dungeons and get more items to sell so that you can get better gear and go back into dungeons to get items to sell literally for like 20 hours.
What about
20 hours? After that?
I mean, it's a long ass game.
What?
Yeah, it's a long
game. I had no idea it was that long. I thought it was like a short
And it's procedurally generated dungeons.
Wow. So it's like infinite.
Let me tell you something. This game does not fool me because I played Reseteer. I played fucking Reseteer, an item shop's tale. You assholes. I played that shit like 6 years ago, and it's just as good, if not better, than this game. Because...
Also, Evolution Worlds.
The art style is cool in this game. I gotta say, I like that. I think if you hadn't played Reseteer, the idea would be very interesting and cool. But Reseteer is literally the exact same thing. And and it gets boring after like 6 hours because when I say you sell stuff, the selling mechanic is so fucking boring. And what you do is you take like, oh, a bat wing, a gold ingot, a fucking magical crystal. And you have to put them on your shelf in your store. You open your store, people come in, you charge like a random amount for it, just whatever you think. And they'll be like, oh, that's too high. And then you lower the price and then they're like, it's still too high. And then you lower it again. And then they're like, okay, I'll buy it. And then they buy it. And then you just keep selling that item for that price in the future. And you have to do that for every item that you get out of your dungeons. And it takes people, you can be selling items to people for like 5 minutes at a time where they're walking to your store, you're restocking your shelves and you're doing that shit of like bringing prices up or down. And that's like 30% of the gameplay. And then you go into the dungeon.
I'm like falling asleep listening to this.
Dude, it's terrible. The dungeons, the movement in this game is like not omnidirectional, like So you can only turn in like it basically you can like only turn in the cardinal directions essentially. You can't even really walk diagonally. So like combat ends up being like you have a sword that sweeps in front of you and like it sweeps like diagonally in front of you, directly in front of you, and then like diagonally in front of you the other way. So it's like kind of like a cleave effect. And then you have like spears that like hit two in front of you or whatever. But it feels like you're playing like fucking tile based combat here, where it's all about like just positioning your character in the right way to hit enemies so they can't hit you back. And it's like that's literally the whole combat system, and it's fucking boring. It's sad, dude.
It looks pretty though.
It looks pretty, and I think if you hadn't played Resiteer, I've been wanting to play it. If you hadn't played Resiteer, it'll be fun for like 3 more hours to you.
Well, 9 hours tops.
Yeah,
that's your threshold.
You get a couple.
At any point, did you feel like feel like Howie in Uncut Gems selling crystals?
You're like, oh.
Yeah, I always I feel
come.
Like Howie.
What is that line, right?
I think I'm going to come. I disagree. I disagree.
I just want to see you put the price down and be like, this is how I win. I went to the dungeon.
They don't care about you.
I went to the dungeon. I got the rock.
This is how I win.
I brought it here.
This is my finals. This is how
Damn,
I win.
I think we have Adam Sandler on this episode. God, I want to have the Sandman's here.
I
want to see
an item. Dude, oh my God, this is amazing. We need, okay. Adult Swim Games or Devolver, I'll make this game for you, but we need an item shop game that is fucking Uncut Gems.
Dude, you should pitch this like at Next Pack.
Selling
PAX West.
Gems to people would be so good.
Dude, how did they like, not? That would have been a genius tie-in game.
So
like a
good.
Nintendo, like a Nintendo
like
movie
an item shop
tie-in, you know?
What?
Nintendo movie tie-in?
Or like... movie tie-ins that they made for like Super Nintendo.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Lion
oh,
King.
Oh yeah, like Page
but...
Master.
Yeah.
Or like you Star know the Wars. Mummy Demastered, that way forward game that was better than the movie itself.
Oh
that like,
yeah,
that was a pretty good Metroidvania type.
Uncut Gems, the item shop game.
Dude, that would be so good.
This will be good. Man, imagine
you
here
heard
go,
it
here
first,
go. Little more of a pitch. Also, it's like it's kind of got a little bit of like Friends of Ringo Ishikara vibe, where it's kind of
that
like a little bit of a life
sim.
That person
has a new game out. I can't remember the name of it, but
oh,
they're
really?
Or,
really?
Yeah, I think it's either out or coming out soon.
Really?
I saw it on Steam.
Because it took
really
him
soon.
Like 8 yeah. years to come out with to create Ringo.
Yeah,
you get that Ringo money.
I'll
now,
look it up
so.
And share it after. But yeah, it's either coming out or it's out. I don't remember, but it's like a different type of game. It's interesting.
They don't think you're gonna score 18 points in the first half, KG.
Oh, it's out, and I think the reason it's out already is because it looks like it's using the exact same tech from his other
yeah.
game.
Yeah, I think it's like the same tech type thing, but not same. Yeah, I don't
the
know.
Description is, Hitman is searching for an answer in France 70-S. Oh, 70s.
Seems lit, dude.
I want to check it out. I don't know. I really like Ringo.
The most
Kala.
Recent announcement is all caps, insane mode on March 4th.
Oh, insane mode's coming. It's today, right? That's March 4th? Today's March 4th? Today's March 4th, day we're recording. So,
never hold it.
First sense, the first review. This game is fine. All right, guys. Item shop, Uncut Gems.
We're writing
Hotline
up a pitch
Miami.
Deck after this.
Hotline Miami-esque.
No, no. It's got to be Moonlighter-esque. It's just the shop. And then you have to like run around
no, but, like,
and like, make bad bets.
Art style-wise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Art style?
Actually, yeah. Hotline Miami. What have those people been doing lately? The Hotline
Sitting
Miami
on their
developers.
Money pile.
Actually, they're probably really
so
rich.
Much dosh. Yeah.
Probably,
like
they've
like,
sold like a billion.
They're sitting
copies.
On a fucking yacht.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I got rich off one thing, I would just, you know, be rich and not do any work for the rest of my life. Like Tom from MySpace, I found out he's like a photographer. Like he just takes photos across the world,
dude.
I'm like,
some
that
of his
would be
photos
me.
Have
That's
appeared. Some of his photos appear on the Windows like welcome splash screen.
That's sick. Is it just
say
Tom
I saw
from
one once
MySpace?
And I was like, no, it said Tom Anderson. And I was like, wait, yeah. Tom Anderson? Like that Tom?
Yeah.
I looked
That's
it up and I was like,
doing.
It was that Tom.
What?
Because he sold MySpace. He's rich as fuck. He's just taking photos and having a good time. I'm like, that's like the dream life. You know, you have one good idea so you can sell it for a lot of money and then you can just chill out for the rest of your life. Like, why does anyone keep finding companies after they find one? It's like, you have enough money. You're good. You don't need...
You just get bored.
Yeah. I mean, no. I would do something like photography. You know, it's like, I would find a hobby that I could not live off of. You know, it's like, I would do games journalism if I got really rich. you know, like something you cannot practically live off of. But, you know, now that you don't have to worry about money.
Or if your parents were really rich.
Good question. I feel like that's different.
No, though, no, no. Right? I was talking about doing games journalism.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people with rich parents in games journalism. Yeah. Honestly.
That's the only way you can do it.
Anyway.
This guy's made... Sorry, I'm on this Hotline Miami beat. Nothing. It's Hotline Miami.
Well, so what is the developer? Denaton? Is that right? Denaton Games? I wonder if they're working on anything.
One of the developers is called Cactus.
Yeah. Man, Hotline... Those games are so good. Both of them. Two's underrated, in my opinion. But...
I want a four-way parlay.
Apparently, one of the artists of Hotline Miami is making... like RPG. He's playing Kingdom Death. Okay, I don't know what he's doing. He's just making art.
Do we want to take a break, or should we just like do some questions and get out of here?
Let's do some questions. Let's wrap it up.
Do we have questions?
My back hurts. Yeah. I got a new mattress. We're on the threshold
of like if we take a break, it's going to be too much.
Yeah.
All right, we got some questions we're going to answer, and then we're going to sign out for the week. I like this one. Should games steal ideas from Animal Crossing? If so, which ones? Which ideas?
Games already steal from Animal Crossing.
Yes, this is 100%.
Yeah, I'd say that's like already a thing.
And they all get it wrong.
Yeah.
Which games steal from Animal Crossing?
Man, there have been so many.
Stardew is very Animal Crossing-y, but it takes it in like new directions. I think it's like
Harvest
one of the rare
Moon
ones that
X Animal Crossing.
Yeah, that's like very much a Stardew. But Stardew is more. There's more going on there. It does its own thing, which I think makes it special. I don't know. That game Ooblets coming out is very Animal Crossing-ish, but I think it looks
Ooblets is very Animal Crossing.
I'm excited for it. I hope that game turns out as good as it looks. It's very cute. I just love gardening.
Castaway Paradise is a game that was coming out.
I have no idea what that is.
It's very...
Never heard of that.
This is why. My Time at Portia. Animal Crossing.
Right. I
feel like Stardew Valley is very Animal Crossing.
Maybe a little bit of Dragon Quest Builders has a little bit of Animal Crossing in it. You know, there's like a little town people you're trying to appease. By building stuff.
I guess that's the thing is that like a lot of these are taking from like a Harvest Moon labor thing. Whereas I feel like Animal Crossing has a certain calmness and like purposelessness, directionlessness, where it's just like it's chill. It's not like I know Tom Nook's always asking for bells and stuff like that, but. You kind of feel like you could just kind of...
It's pretty chill.
It's chill. Like, you don't have to be doing shit. You can just, like, pick flowers and, like, catch some fish and chill out, you know? Which... Dude, my brain works so fast sometimes. You know what is a game that was kind of influenced by Animal Crossing in a different way that we're thinking of, but is good?
Dead Cells.
And that other games should take from Animal Crossing...
Toontown Online.
A Short Hike.
Oh, right. Yeah, definitely.
A Short fucking hike.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Very Animal Crossing.
And that's what I think people should take.
I would say that's pretty, definitely.
And I think that sense of calm is good, which is, it feels very anti-video game-y and still sort of radical in some ways, you know? Like, A Short Hike, the fact that it felt so, like, fun and, like, not oriented towards a specific goal that you had to do and you had a lot of pressure on you to do that. That's a good game feeling, man. And I think more games should have that.
It's weird because I don't know like what that sauce is. Like, why is it so good?
Like a way, there's like a way to go too much in like earnestness, or like you're getting too cute with it.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't like, I think there's something about Animal Crossing that's very, I don't know. It's like cute, but like, it's not like, oh, look at us, we're cute.
Yeah, it's not like it's cloying.
Like, yeah, it's never cloying, and it feels like, it's not like for kids. It's not for like adults that think things are cute or whatever. It feels like very much like a E for everyone type of experience. But it's also like very silly and like makes a lot of jokes that only adults would laugh at, but does it in like a way it's not like gross or anything. It's always like, you know, that, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's definitely like a weird, what's the secret element that makes like games like Animal Crossing and A Short Hike feel very like genuine and like sweet and like chill that other games have struggled to, I guess, attain.
I think it's that lack of like an end goal, like trying to save the world or like trying to do something super specific. Like A Short Hike is super directionless, man. Like, you're just walking around, talking to people, enjoying your day.
I'm just trying to get the top of the mountain though, but I think that it's,
but it's not,
I think
like
maybe that's what it is that there's deal. Like an ambient goal.
Yeah. It's not like your life is going to change when you reach the top of the mountain. It's just like, you're going on a hike and like, every other part of the hike is just as interesting as reaching the top of the mountain. Like, it, when you're going on a hike, your goal is to, quote, reach the end of the trail or the top of the mountain or whatever, but it's not like that's what you're there for. Like, you're there for the journey, you know? And I think that's kind of like an accepted thing about A Short Hike. And in some ways, Animal Crossing, you know, in a proverbial sense.
Yeah. I'm also like, I feel like this is a sort of thing we're getting out of Hollow Knight 2, and I'm like, I don't need a game to be like Animal Crossing. Like, I'm not, I think Stardew Valley was probably the closest I would get, and I feel like that was because it was novel enough where it combined sort of like a long ass gap between a major Animal Crossing release and like the right ideas from Harvest Moon. But like, I'm not looking at other stuff trying to get the Animal Crossing vibe because I can just play Animal Crossing. So I look at stuff like, what was that? Wasn't there the level, what was it? It was like the level 5 game that was like Animal Crossing-ish, but like had quests. Katie, I feel like you would know this.
Are you thinking of Game Freak's Little Town Hero?
Maybe. That's the new one though, right?
Yeah, it came out in like October. I reviewed it.
No, there was definitely like a 3DS game, Animal Crossing, but with quests. I'm searching Google right now. Fantasy Life.
Oh, I remember Fantasy Life. Yeah.
Do you remember that Fantasy Life?
That was like
Life?
A Josh pretty knows. Popular game at the time.
Well, yeah, because it's literally like, it's like Animal Crossing.
It was like medieval Animal
you like
Crossing.
Go on
yeah.
quests. Yeah, and I feel like that's like, if I'm looking for something that's like Animal Crossing, I feel like that's where my mind goes, where it's like, give me, don't just make it be Animal Crossing. Make it be something that's like a little different, like it's got another system on top of it or whatever, because Animal Crossing does what Animal Crossing does so well that anything else just feels like an imitation of that.
Yeah, I agree. Next question. Have you ever been a hypester for a game before its early access or release? Kyle was a Starship, or what is it? Star Citizen?
Oh, yeah. God.
I was a Star Citizen guy.
Yeah, man. I was, there was a period of my life where I was very into Star Citizen. And also, a funny story about this is that I remember the Star Citizen was really hitting for the first time, like post Kickstarter. And that was like around the time I graduated college. And I like didn't know what I was going to be doing. And I literally remember thinking to myself, like, maybe I'll join the Peace Corps. And then I was like, wait, if I join the Peace Corps, I might be gone when Star Citizen comes out. So maybe I shouldn't do that. So I was a big hype boy for that.
I was big into Hearthstone before it released.
Oh, yeah. I guess I was technically in. Yeah. Well, wasn't the question like before early access or during early access?
Oh, that's true.
I thought so before.
That's true.
Because I, Because I feel like there's games I was into in early access that, you know, like I was excited for, and then they came out and I was like, cool, it's the same game. They just made some minor choices. Like, I don't know. That sort of thing.
I'm anti-hype.
I got really into, I got...
You're anti-hype. Wow.
I liked, actually, I was a Stardew Valley hype boy before it was a thing. I was like following that blog for like 2 or 3 years before it got picked up by Chucklefish.
I didn't know that was like known before it hit big.
Like, yeah. I mean, it was like people were excited about it, but he was posting updates like every 6 months or something. And then I think when it got picked up by Chucklefish, it got really big. But he also wasn't sharing like a lot of screenshots or whatever. Another one that I've been following that might also be big is this game. Actually, I don't even know if it's out yet. It's called Secrets of Grindia, but it's like the Secret of Mana. I guess, is it out? It's like the Secret of Mana-esque game. I guess it's in early access now, but it hasn't really blown up. But the other big one that I was following that is going really big on Steam right now is Stone Shard, which is really good. It's like
That's the game I was thinking of earlier.
Really?
Stone Shard. Yeah.
Yeah, this is my...
I don't know what I was thinking.
This is my recent pre-hype game. I don't think it's game.
Tactics, but...
No, yeah, it's like a roguelike thing.
Stone Shard. I don't know what I was thinking.
This I'm is the game
crazy.
That I like.
There's so many games.
Yeah. I remember tweeting about this a bit ago where I was like, this game's going to do fucking numbers and no one's going to cover it. And right now on Steam, Stone Shard has 8,000 reviews. And they're all mostly positive. And I think this game is just destroying the sales charts and no one has picked it up. And it's really good. So you should cover it.
Yeah, I want to play it. Yeah. I'm trying to think of I guess PUBG. But everyone was into PUBG, right? Like, it wasn't like I was not in the minority on that one. But I mean, I feel like I got into it like right before everyone else got into it. Like, you know, it was like that first month when it was just like a Steam stream hit and I got really into it and then everyone got into it. So it was no longer alone, but
I thought of one,
you know,
it's a little tactics game called a Cantata.
Oh, tell me more about this game.
It's on my wish list on Steam.
Same.
Hell
same.
Yeah.
Made by After School Studio.
It sounds familiar.
I don't know. Worth a look. Seems cool.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Great writing.
Great writing.
Great game devs.
I actually think I was pretty great big team. Hype on Kentucky Route Zero back when it was like only distributed through like
through the website.
The website. Yeah.
Man, that was back in the day.
Listen, this question is hard because it's literally the people on this podcast's job to find out about shit before other people know about it. So it's like, how much can you claim knowing about Kentucky Route Zero?
Kyle, specifically Katie.
You
both
too.
Of
y'all.
I dabble. Okay. This has been an insane episode because we had a lot of technical issues, but I think we're through.
Hopefully you don't even notice.
Hopefully
Josh's
magic.
Editing will be so good you won't even notice that Kyle's video wasn't working, my audio dropped out. What else happened?
It usually
we
is.
We have to cut out a section.
Honestly, we got stream bombed. Josh had a heating gaming moment.
I got DDoSed.
Oh man, yeah, Josh.
Josh got DDoSed.
I accidentally flashed the camera.
You really have to do that one.
Josh got banned from Twitch
for DMCA.
I broke an embargo.
DMCA complaints. Fair use was used.
This is reminding me
only the first few things of this happened. So if any PR are listening to this, I did not break any embargoes. I will let you know. Like, I did not break an embargo. But I'm joking about breaking an embargo for the sake of this podcast, you know?
We need to do another
actually
pre-review.
I'm trying to think. I wonder if I've ever broken embargo. I probably have.
You
I
have definitely
instance,
not.
So.
You're like the most careful anti-bargo. You don't even
Oh, dude.
Talk
I
about,
get like I'm so
Yeah.
I will say I am playing something under an embargo, but like there are times I get nervous when I'm like laying something out pre-embargo in like our CMS. I'm like, what if I hit publish on accident? You know, it's like I get so paranoid. But it's like I usually just like if it's in there and everyone can see it, I usually put like do not publish in like all caps, like do not fucking touch this. Like this cannot go up. Yeah,
you're like the most careful person about that stuff that I've ever met.
Yeah. I mean, also, I feel like when people break an embargo, they never break one again because it's like horrifying and you feel really bad and all that stuff. Like I've been around people who've done it and they always feel terrible because it's always just like a stupid mistake of like, whoops, I put the wrong date. Like I didn't put the date. I put the time and not the date and like stuff like that. It's like very small, easy to miss things. And it feels awful and I feel bad for them. But I don't think I've ever done it, so I'm perfect.
I'm perfect.
Trust me, with all the embargoes, I'm always good. Actually, I'm sure there's like one instance that I just can't remember for some reason, but I have a good track record. I'm sure there's
not. Oh wait, hold on. Last question. We got a last minute question coming in under the wire. Oldest game that holds up. I'll answer it right now. Pokemon Puzzle League. Actually, that's not true.
Oldest game that holds up? I feel like there's so like
there's a lot of old games. Honestly, Ocarina of Time, when I play it, I'm like, this Tetris, game is perfect. Tetris.
Yeah, I'm like Tetris is like ageless. That will always be a good puzzle game. Puyo Puyo, same thing. Like any puzzle game really, I think, is like kind of ageless.
Oldest in Pong? I don't know. There are a lot of old games hold up, actually.
Yeah, tic-tac-toe. I mean, I've been playing Final Fantasy VII. Like games, that combat does not hold
newer
up.
Newer games, I feel like, hold up less because they're all trying to like do the same thing. Like Hollow Knight,
yeah,
is good, but you play Hollow Knight as like your first Metroidvania, and it's like hard to play like Metroid. But I feel like you don't play new Tetris, and it like invalidates old Tetris. You're like, that's still
like, and yeah, like old, like every Mario game is like perfect, like the old like classic Mario games. Like A Link to the Past is a perfect video game, probably like a platonic ideal of an adventure game. Like I think that's like the oldest game that I could think of that holds up. Like A Link to the Past is still fun to this day. Like I popped in because on the SNES Switch thing and I'm like, wow, this game's still fucking great. It's yeah. still like an incredible game. Like the art is still great, the music's fantastic. It's just like, and then, yeah, and the modders have given it new life with, like, the randomizer stuff, which is, like, so cool and awesome. And gives it, like, a new lens to play it through.
Speaking of Mario.
I guess I would say it's the best oldest game that holds up.
I want to say really quick, I think Super Mario Maker might have the best, like, streaming community out there. Because I've been watching a lot of Super Mario Maker streamers, and they're the best, man. Highly recommend Trihex and the Beast 721, THABEAST 721. Dude, I could watch the Beast play video games all day. He's funny, he's really good at Mario, and he's like a nice dude. Yeah, highly recommend those people.
Did you watch the relay race they did for Super Mario Maker 2?
Yeah, the Beast was in there. The Beast was in there.
Okay, I was wondering if like those people were in it. Because I remember it was Panga.
Yeah, Panga's great.
It was like all the big people and like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great speedrun if anyone wants to watch a speedrun that they missed. Like, it's just like a really fun relay race.
All of those guys are great. All those guys are great. We're Bad End Podcast. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you didn't catch too many of our insane technical difficulties, but thank you for joining us. We're part of Super Culture Network, which also has bullet points under them. You can check them out. They're going to have a Kentucky Route Zero month coming up, so go check that out. We also have some new eps of Savoir Faire coming to you soon, the Disco Elysium podcast that we run. And we will see you in a couple weeks after I give you our email address, which is badendpod@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter @badendpodcast. You can at us there, talk to us there. We talked about one of those tweets today in our episode. So if you tweeted us, we might get back to you. Also, like when you rate us and review us on iTunes, because that's very helpful. So if you get a second, do that. Leave a little written review. Ultra helpful. And besides that, we will see you in a couple weeks. Later.
See ya. Thank you.